This is Joe Zoller from Devoncroft Partners. This podcast was recorded on Thursday, April 10th, 2020. In it, my colleague Josh Steinauer and I interview Grass Valley President Tim Shoulders about the state of the media tech industry, the impact of COVID-19 on Grass Valley and on the industry more broadly. Topics we discussed include the return of live sports, remote production or REMI workflows, cloud in live production, the commercial viability of Tier 2 and Tier 3 live events, and the status of the sale by Belden of Grass Valley to Black Dragon Capital, which was announced on February 4th, 2020. Please note, we experienced some technical issues while making this recording, and we're working to resolve them for future recordings. We spoke to Tim by phone, and you'll notice a big contrast between how Tim's voice sounds compared to how Josh and Joe sound. So having said that, let's pick up the conversation. Can you tell me, Tim, what's going on with the business right now, given all of the issues with the global health pandemic?
First and foremost, we need to get the public health crisis behind us so that we can have some comfort that our families are going to be healthy, our employees are healthy. Beyond that, from a business side, the Pearl Harbor of this COVID epidemic, or the turning point for me, is when the NBA decided to suspend play. And as I think about Grass and how the COVID epidemic has impacted us, I think the biggest concern we have is just how quickly these live sports are going to get back on air. And I think that's really outside of the health and safety of all our employees, which of course is the utmost concern. Next to that, when I just think about the business in general, the best thing that can happen for us is for some of these sports leagues to start announcing what their schedules will look like. And the sooner they start broadcasting events again, I think the better off us in the media technology market are going to be.
Tim, have you been in touch with any of the leagues? I assume you've been in touch with sports broadcasters and truck companies, but what about the leagues themselves?
Yeah, so personally, I have not directly been speaking to a lot of the leagues. I do have some contacts that I'll talk to from time to time. Certainly within my org, we do have discussions with the NFL, the NBA, F1, et cetera, who are customers of ours in different respects. But so far, nobody's been able to give me a date. And those guys probably couldn't until they publicly announced something if they wanted to. But I'm hoping for a June resumption of some of these leagues that have suspended play and an attempt to catch up their seasons. I think that will be best for at least our business at Grass Valley and certainly for our customers in the truck market and all the freelancers that depend on that market.
Tim, this is Josh. So I have two questions on that. I like the NBA cancellation, kind of the start, or at least when it hit home. That was March 11th. Adam Silver has now said that they won't reevaluate when they're going to return to play until May 1st. So I think June, I would suspect that that's probably a best case. But what that will ultimately look like when we get back is going to be either central locations, you know, Vegas has been floated. In terms of baseball, it's been Arizona. Have you and your team started to think about what that type of production would look like? If you were an optimist, you would say, without having fans in the arena, we might have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do different, more engaging productions. You know, start looking at unattainable camera angles or unbelievable access to something that's more like a scrimmage environment. I don't know if you've had those conversations at all.
There's no doubt that in absence of having a crowd there in the stadium, it presents you with a lot of different opportunities. For one, you can put a camera anywhere in the stadium and have virtually any camera angle. It also puts a premium on the broadcast because you know you're going to likely have more viewers in the broadcast than you typically would. At least those folks who would typically be at the stadium will be tuning in. And you're going to have to replace the energy that the crowd gives to the broadcast. So certainly, that's something that we're interested in seeing how it unfolds. Now, when I speak to my partners in the industry, our customers, truck companies, they're not at the stage where they're able to work with us on what those things would look like because they don't know when the games are going to begin again. And I think it's probably just too early to really dig into that in depth, because we don't know what that's going to look like. But certainly, we speculate and dream all the time about how we put on a better show, even without a crowd.
My follow-up question is decidedly more pessimistic, and I know you'll love tackling this one. I would say reasonable people, we could sit here and try to pick a time on the calendar we'll see live events again. But My question for you is, my suspicion is whatever that date is, add a year to it, and that's probably when we start to see technology budgets get back to what we would have thought of as normal. The really sadness that comes over me is 2020 was supposed to be a gigantic year for our industry. Is that too pessimistic an outlook? Would you point to other perhaps elements of optimism that I'm overlooking there?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think that's pretty pessimistic. Now, I am rational enough to believe, but I don't think there is a going back. So we live in a world that will be changed by this COVID epidemic. You know, the experience that a fan has going to a stadium is going to be different. And I think it probably will be very similar to the changes we saw post 9/11 and going to sporting events, just in a different way, looking at different things. So certainly the world has changed, but I do think there's an element of some of the demand that would have been in the first quarter and the second quarter, and that demand will need to get fulfilled. And I think that is the element that kind of bridges us back to normal levels of investment more quickly. I also think it's going to become imperative as our customers think about their strategic planning that they offer solutions in the event the world has to go into a shutdown like this again. In some respects, it's a 100-year flood. In other respects, the reason we're in the situation we're in with COVID and a global health pandemic is the connectedness of the world. I think there are a lot of benefits to the world being so connected. So I suspect that most of our customers are going to want to plan to operate in the event there's another crisis and plan for those remote operations, which should lead us down a path of some investment in the broadcast infrastructure, because we have a lot of customers whose broadcast plans and their workflows really weren't designed for this working at home. And they're doing amazing things with tools that really weren't designed to do this. So I think there will be a renewed interest in investing in tools that are designed to work from home or to work remotely.
Tim, to focus on some of the more optimistic points, and this is not a surprise that I'd be asking you this, allow me a little room to frame up this question. The short form of the question is, do you think this changes how we sell technology in the media space? The longer background there is, I'm suspicious ever since you came into this business, you've been surrounded by people and customers that have told you how important the big trade events are and why it's important to spend a lot of money at those events. And you've probably questioned that wisdom, or maybe you haven't questioned that wisdom, but now you're going to have data points. You'll know exactly what you have spent, what you've saved, and you might even have a view onto what the ultimate impact was. And I know it's a little premature, but would you expect we're going to, as an industry, revisit the wisdom of the collective spend that we're putting into all of these global events?
Yeah, so I'll answer it in two parts. The first part was really, how has the sales cycle changed? And I think in the last month, I can tell you from working with my sales team, they found a lot of efficiency being able to click on a Zoom meeting and go speak to multiple customers in various geographies all on the same day. And it's not as if that technology weren't available to us before. We were just entrenched in our old habits of getting on an airplane and flying in and having a face-to-face meeting. But we can eliminate a lot of waste and actually increase the efficiency of our sales team by eliminating some of this travel. So I think there is a favorable benefit in that we're all going to be better at using these collaboration tools. And that should lower the cost of acquisition, I think, for all of us in the industry, which is positive.
Tim, you're probably, similar to me, a student on just putting some numbers on that inefficiency. In your direct experience, you took 40 points of margin out of SAM as part of the acquisition. And that was almost pure overlap in going to the same trade shows and investing in similar product groupings. And so just from that overlap, everybody was better off in our world. Customers, yourselves, investors. If that's the scale of the inefficiency, it would seem to me that there wouldn't be a great motivation to go back to the way we were doing things.
Agreed. I think there's going to be a lot of motivation for my sales guys to spend less time on the road and more nights at home with their family, and they'll be more productive for it. So that's all positive. I think the second part of your question was about trade shows, right, Jeff?
I don't want to come off hitting it too hard. I guess where I've been a little disappointed is it seems that the current disruption hasn't dented our appetite for giving out awards. But I would view just the spend on these events needs to be rationalized. And this would be an opportunity where we'd have data that would establish, it's not a perfect apples to apples, but we'd start to really get a sense of, wow, we're spending an awful lot of money here. And we need to kind of question whether or not that's the best way for us to go engage with our customers.
Yeah, so I think from a trade show standpoint, it's really, really expensive to do trade shows like we do trade shows in this industry. In some respects, we all pay our dues as it fits the price of admission to operate in this industry. And when I have suggested, because I've got the benefit, I guess, or the deficit, thinking how you look at it, being relatively new to the industry. I've been in and around the industry for less than a decade. You know, I can look at things with a fresh set of eyes. And, you know, from the beginning, I kind of questioned, why are we spending so much to host these events? And I think there's a lot of just historical momentum that keeps us going back and doing the same thing again and again. I know at Grass Valley, my marketing team has done a really nice job of virtualizing a lot of the trade show setup that we used to actually send physical goods out for. So a lot of times you'll see tactile things like panels and the like on display that are working with virtual animation in the background instead of bringing a lot of servers and hardware to feed those things. So that saved us quite a bit of money. I suspect that as we go and look at this COVID situation in hindsight, the trade shows are going to have to deal with another issue. And that is when you look at some of the first outbreaks that propagated around the world, you see a couple themes. One is, for some reason, skiing in the Alps. And then the other one is the trade shows. So I think, as I see how this thing plays out, as bullish as I am on us getting live sports back on the air, which I think will be a necessity. I think governments and politicians will want live sports to begin again, because I think we're just going to exhaust our queues on demand services, Disney Plus and the like, and be ready for some live sports. I feel the opposite about trade shows. I actually think the momentum will be to wait to bring trade shows back at the end, if at all. So we're watching things, and we're good participants in the community and trade shows. When our customers come, are a great way to meet a lot of people in a very, very short period of time and to make a lot of personal connections. And I know I've met a lot of folks in the industry. I call friends now at trade shows, closed a lot of deals in trade shows, and all of that stuff is wonderful. But I think with the backdrop of this global pandemic, it becomes harder for me to see how we restart those types of global events again.
The only thing I would add to your point there, Tim, about live sports is it is within the commercial motivations, and perhaps that's a subject that's a little sensitive right now, but it's in the commercial motivations of media companies to recover that lost revenue. And frankly, the leagues themselves and the players, you know, there's that great quote from Patrick Ewing during the NBA lockout that although NBA players make a lot of money, they spend a lot of money. So everybody there has a commercial motivation to move as quickly as possible. But if I could transition though, Tim, we talked about how we sell. Does that get different? Can I ask you the related question, does this change what we sell? Because I suspect that your subscription revenues, your service revenues are holding up better than things that you actually have to physically ship. And the glib answer I would say is it's because it's easier to do. It's easier to get it out the door. It's easier to support. Maybe it's even easier to sell. Do you see this accelerating those revenue streams?
I do, actually. I think any type of solutions that allow folks to work remotely right now, that skill set, those solutions that are in high demand today. And I think the industry recognizes, I think our customers recognize that there are efficiencies to be had by building out remote workflows. Yet, again, similar to the trade show discussion, just force of nature, there's a lot of momentum, or lack of momentum, I guess, to move things forward. And I think post-COVID, some of those things that we're seeing as we'll get around to it become strategically important. And so we'll see a push toward workflows that enable remote production. And I think that happens with the help of the cloud, either public or private cloud. So I think companies that have significant investment in products that are IT ready and IT enabled, and virtualized solutions are going to be the ones that do well on the other end. If you don't have IT as an important part of your ethos, that's the highway to the cloud. I think those guys are going to struggle, because I think the momentum is going to be toward cloud-based workflows and workflows that allow folks to operate remotely.
And so, Tim, anytime we talk about cloud, I'm surprised how little we talk about how does one price in cloud. And I think the habit of the industry, since it was historically very hardware-based, pricing was just tied to the underlying COGS of the solutions. And as we moved into cloud, we either just carried forward some real discounting practices of software in on-premise environments, or we didn't do a good job of taking a breath and trying to do a better job of value-based selling to highlight how this is value and price off the value that the software was providing to a media organization. Are you taking advantage of this pause with your sales team to say, hey, we need to revisit how we're pricing these solutions and how we go about selling to highlight the value? Or is that dream still a little farther away?
I think it's the other way around, Josh. This is something we've been going through and coming to grips with over the last several years. If you look at the legacy companies in the industry, very often we would price our products to sell the hardware, and we would create these fantastic software solutions that were practically given away as just components of the hardware. We'd price everything based on the hardware. And so over the last few years at Grass Valley, we've been working to change that paradigm. So maybe you price the hardware less, you price the software more. Because ultimately, when you do go fully virtualized, you do go to cloud-based solutions, all the value is in the intelligence we're putting in the software. I've got a higher proportion of my employees who are software engineers to mechanical or electronic engineers than I do revenue from those spaces. So what does that tell you? That tells me that the value in what we're doing is really related to the software. And pricing is critical, and pricing a software solution is different than pricing a hardware solution, and certainly pricing for pay-as-you-go type model is different than pricing for an enterprise license.
But we're at an event where that didn't do us any favors as we moved into these new technology environments. When you think about your customers, where do you think they are on the journey? Because I think often it's fashionable for customers to get up on stage at events and say, oh, we want more flexibility, we want more OpEx. But in the cold end of the day, when the finance team gets involved, they often want that certainty of CapEx, or they jump through hoops to get that same certainty through an OpEx model. My statement to them would be, if you have a preference for CapEx, OpEx because of certainty, that's just an admission that you don't really understand the cost of your business. But we're at an event where everyone has to take a pause. We have to start to think, hey, was it the right way to do things over the past few years? Is here a catalyst to say, let's take some time, really understand costs and metrics of our operations, and then that provides the suppliers an avenue to now, based on value, improving those metrics.
I think it varies, Josh. We have customers that treat their OpEx budget separate from their CapEx budget, and customers who desire, when we offer products and or services in an OpEx type model, to convert it to CapEx so that they can apply it against their CapEx budget and depreciate it, record that depreciation, but below the line. You know, I'm a finance guy by training, so you know, I'm very familiar with how accounting rules treat depreciation from OpEx and you know, how that impacts our customers' perceptions of those different types of modes of spending. At the end of the day, though, you know, to you and I, it's all cash. And these OpEx models, the beauty in the OpEx models, in my opinion, has less to do with the ability. I think the ability to turn it on and shut it off is great. I think the real travesty by focusing on CapEx so much in the industry is that you can't experiment as much when you've got $1 million or $2 million spent in front of you to put on a different type of show or a different type of workflow or do something differently. You've got to cross a really high barrier to take that leap. You know, if you can pay $50,000, $60,000 to turn a workflow on for a couple weekends and see if something works, that's a much different hurdle, and you can be more creative and do more experimentation. So what I'm most excited about is, as I work to transform Grass Valley from what it used to be, which was a hardware-centric business, to something that is much more heavily invested in cloud and recurring revenue. The thing that I'm most excited about is giving our customers the ability to do just that, to turn on new workflows overnight and to experiment with new revenue streams. I think that's the most impactful piece.
The other side of that mirror that I would add to your comment there, Tim, as you know, we're involved in doing a lot of survey work of the customer universe. And one of the primary goals there is to understand the perception of suppliers based on the feedback of their customers. And it would seem to me, if you're just going to sell CapEx deployments and you look at average depreciation cycles in this industry, maybe historically 5-7 years, I'm sure you have customers that you'll go visit that has equipment that probably has a lot of old logos on it going back 10-15 years. And it seems like such a missed opportunity. If you could only sell things to people that like you every 10 years, I'm not sure how long people are planning to have a professional career in this space, but you might only get 2 or 3 chances to sell things to somebody. But if you do have those revenue models you're just highlighting and you can turn on workflows, you could sell to these people that like you all the time.
You know, OpEx models, pay-as-you-go models allow us to engage much more deeper with our customers. There are pluses and minuses for a supplier. The pluses, you get the recurring revenue stream. I guess the minuses, when you're on the other side, you also have the chance to get flipped out at any point in time by a competitor, right?
It's so Darwinian.
Yeah.
I love it. You don't just get the good, right? You have to get the good with the bad, have confidence in your products. And I think this ties back to earlier. If it's a lot easier for customers to experiment and to turn on suppliers, and suppliers have more of a motivation to put money into R&D to prove that their products are the best, then we get away from spending 30% of sales on trade events.
I don't know, Josh. If you're talking about pre-recorded content in a playout environment, sure. But for a lot of stuff Grass Valley does, that's kind of a Pollyanna-ish view of the world. Gee, won't it be great if we don't have to pay for trade shows and we can turn things off and on? I mean, you tell me, Tim, it seems like the reality for most of these customers is that they're not yet at a point where they can turn things off and turn things on in a live production environment. And most of the suppliers probably aren't ready either.
Yeah, I would agree with both those statements, Joe. However, at Grass Valley, we've been working and previewing with the industry in multiple different levels. We're focused on evolving our business to cloud and recurring revenues. And through that process, we get to have a lot of discussions with customers about is do it. And the most likely point of entry for us, and probably it's true for our competition and our customers as well, is to start with new content. So find some new content that the customer has always wanted to produce, a new revenue stream or something, and then let's go OpEx with that. And then the legacy stuff continues on. But eventually the customer sees the value in going OpEx. And then some of the more events you typically think about in broadcast get converted. I know some of the areas that we're really focused on right now are things like radio shows that are in video. Some radio shows that have very professional television analogs or over-the-top analogs in video. And that's a great place for us to work on some of these cloud workflows and making these cloud workflows work, because it doesn't really put a lot at risk for either side. There's not a lot of risk for Grass Valley that we're going to take a major show down if something doesn't go right. And there's not a lot of risk for the customer that something's going to go wrong. So it's a great place to experiment. And I think folks will look at those types of things, and that's where they'll do the experimentation. That's kind of the beauty of the OpEx model. And I think they'll find they like it. And then the whole industry will head that way, just like we've seen things like editing, you know, even tools we use every day, like your spreadsheet tool. All of that stuff is all now cloud subscription based for the most part. I think we'll see a lot of the broadcast tools we use go that way over time.
I guess there's always a split between live and everything else. I would expect the not live stuff to move much more quickly in that direction.
Yeah, it's interesting, Joe. So this is a conundrum that, you know, we've sat and noodled on a lot at Grass Valley, because the area of the market that was first to go cloud was playout and pre-produced content primarily versus live content. And it's odd because your playout channels are always on. You really don't need the flexibility of cloud to run your playout channels. You really need playout for live. That's the magic. These live events, you drive a truck and produce a show, the truck's there for several days, maybe before it hits the road again, but they're ephemeral. They come and they go. That live production bit is the part that benefits the most from cloud. Turn it on, turn it off. And so we looked at how the market was adopting cloud. We thought it was odd that they started at the place of the market where there's less benefit from the elasticity that cloud brings. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, but we found that to be strange.
I can see how there'd be less elastic benefit on the actual playing out of channels, but in all of the content prep, all of the ingest and QC and transcoding and normalization and localization, all those types of things, we've seen broadcasters, media companies reaping incredible benefits from the cloud once they get those processes into a public cloud supply chain. Savings of like 60, 70, 80%. So there's a lot of benefit from that point of view. And then making sure those channels get played out. Live production, presumably there's a lot more at stake. Maybe you need to have additional resiliency that you can build into play out environment that you can't do in live production, because if something falls over, you have dead air, which nobody wants. So it seems to me like it makes sense that the first place people would go for cloud is for pre-recorded linear channels. I don't know if we can put a date on when there'll be fully public cloud-based live production end-to-end chain, though.
Yeah, so at Grass, when we knew these problems, we really found two things that we thought were different. One of them was the fact that the live production environment is higher risk, so you hit on that, right? There's conservatism in the part of the community that does live production because of how valuable it is. So that's one of the reasons that we think there's been this reluctance to grab onto the elasticity that the cloud offers for live production. The other area is just one of economics. So the reason I believe that playout moved faster than the live production side of the cloud was because there's a lot more money in live events and money flowing in live events, in the production of live events, than there was in the playout market, particularly linear playout. So those budgets, I think, on the linear playout side got cut a lot faster than the live production budgets, just as a function of the fact that as our customers look to retain their audiences, they realize how much live content was important. So that those are the conclusions we reached as to why cloud really started in playout. But we have a strong sense that cloud is going to be an important part of live productions in the future of broadcast.
Well, circling back to the conversation about COVID-19, you can see that some of the things that were going to happen anyways in the future, we believe those trends will be accelerated. Things like cloud for live production, and certainly REMI or at-home production or home run production or whatever you call it. And I wonder whether there's a yin and yang to the flexibility that people want and getting some of that through remote production. But for you as a technology supplier and a very important one at the center of all of those live productions with things like switchers and cameras, if live production moves to REMI in anger, as it were, the unit volume of the products that were previously, as you described, in a truck, it's there for a few days, they do the show, they break it down, then they go away. So it's, let's say it's used two times a week or three times a week, but could move to two or three times a day. And that kind of begs the question of whether the unit volume for those products that don't have to be in an arena, switchers, replay, graphics, audio boards, signal processing stuff, a lot of which you make, the unit volume must go down by some percentage that we put a finger in the air and say a third. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think in the scenario you put forth there, you're right. I think if all we did was to take the productions that are happening today and park all the trucks and then connect them to the cameras and the arenas with cables, you need less equipment, right? So I think that holds true. I think the counter trend is there's a desire for more content that is professionally produced and curated for smaller audiences. So things like high school sports, parents pay a lot of money to send their kids to college and those kids play sports and they have events, you know, those could use some type of professional production. So I think there's a still a lot of room for the market to expand, even if there's some constructive destruction, if you will, in a fully REMI model. I also think that the trends that have held us back from going full REMI over the last several years will still be in play, even though the technology gets better all the time. And there are some really, truly impressive REMI productions, including ones that Grass Valley has helped enable. It's still the exception rather than the rule. I think there's a natural conservatism in the industry that I don't expect to go away. Although I do think that this COVID situation, just like it's helping my sales guys realize there might be more efficient ways to sell instead of getting on planes and flying around, it's probably having a similar effect on our customers as they look at their own operations.
When it comes to those tier two or tier three events, anything that Grass Valley can do to help improve the quality of the broadcast of women's college water polo, I'm all for, because having a kid who plays, boy, we've seen some really bad productions. But one of the things that occurs to me as you were saying that is that the COVID-19 pandemic is coming at this time where we're all kind of rethinking things, but it's coming at a time when, A, this is 2020, an even year, there were a lot of big events, the Olympics, the Euro Football Championships, and we know about that. But it's also coming during the time when we know there is planning going on for the next set of sports rights for things like the NFL or the NBA or some of the soccer leagues. And I'm curious to know, in the context of the Remy conversation, whether the sports rights that will dictate whether or not they'll build in a lot more remote production for that. And if so, what is the impact on suppliers generally?
Yeah, I've had a lot of these conversations, and these are fun conversations to have with the sports leagues. But I will tell you, the leagues approach them differently, and that, you know, I'm not going to share any secrets about who approaches things what ways. But there are some leagues that are aggressively looking at how do we do more Remy. There are other leagues who aren't really interested at all. So there is a natural pull to the status quo there. You know, in my opinion, I think there's a lot of content that the rights holder has and the rights owner produces that folks would be interested in consuming that just isn't broadcast today. I mean, there's another element where Remy can fit in with today's existing models and do more. For instance, if you could have access to your favorite NFL team's training camp during your day, you could jump into training camp at any point in time and see how things are going with the new wide receiver your team just drafted. That's a pretty cool feature that I think some folks would be willing to pay for. I've got family members who go to training camp live, you know, and pay to go enter training camp and watch these players work out. I think they'd probably be willing to spend $5 a month or something like that to have access to their team's training camp, to have access to all the pressers and pre-produced content that the teams produce. So I think there's a whole wealth of content, both live and pre-produced there, that could be monetized for all of these sports leagues that in some cases they're doing a great job of it, some cases they're not doing so much. And that's an area where I think some of the solutions that we're working on at Grass Valley in the form of Remy and cloud-based live productions could really come into play.
Have you considered setting up some kind of as a service to provide that functionality for those leagues or teams that are looking to do that? Because it's difficult to see how some of the lower production tiers are really going to move the needle for you guys.
I would never say never. However, we don't really view that as our part in the ecosystem. We love working with companies like an NEP or Game Creek or Colorado Studios who provide services in that vein. And our focus is really on providing the best technology solutions and having a robust ecosystem of partners that help service the broadcast community. That's how we see our place today. Now, you know, the world evolves. So down the road, could something change? I suppose certainly. But in the near term, while we're very interested in offering pay-as-you-go models, we're also very interested in joining up with partners who can provide advanced services and to those end customers.
Yeah, sure. You don't want to get into competition with your customers as well, I'm sure. Sorry, Josh, go ahead.
Tim, you already know this. I'm horribly cynical about these other opportunities you've mentioned. I don't think they're nearly as big as most people would hope they are. I hope I'm wrong there. But in my experience, those opportunities are used to justify unjustifiable sales expense. But if I could ask you, when we start talking there about business models, and maybe you could adjudicate something Joe and I always argue about, you mentioned the playout environment was one of the first to go cloud, and it just got crushed in terms of pricing. And some of that was too many vendors. Some of that was really poor, I would say, sales practice and how the solutions were priced and delivered. But is that just an inherent characteristic of moving to those environments, that there needs to be a washout and it needs to, at first, be detrimental to the suppliers before it can be better? Or a more optimistic view, would I say the suppliers did it wrong and we have to be very thoughtful about how we move to these business models so that we still have resources that can be put into future R&D? I don't know if you've started to think about that in the context of live production or Remy.
Yeah, of course we have. And I would agree. I don't think you have to destroy destroy the market to disrupt it. At the same time, you can't just pull a spreadsheet up and take the depreciated cost of a traditional hardware solution and, you know, try to recover it with the same customer when you offer them the elastic solution. I think there's a bit of a calculus that needs to be performed that is wholly related to the value you're creating, the revenue you're allowing the customer to pull in. So it's not an easy task to price an elastic solution. But one of the things you can't lose sight of is that there is value in the elasticity. So being able to turn something off and not pay for it is inherently valuable, whereas before you had to make a huge upfront investment and amortize it over time. To be able to turn something off when you're done with it is valuable. So there is a price that should be attributed to that as well. But pricing is the trick here for sure.
If we were going to tie your arms, Tim, and say, do you think the transition to the cloud grows the size of the market or shrinks the size of the market or neutral? Which camp are you in?
I guess, Josh, you have to say which part of the market you think it's going to shrink or grow before Tim tells you what he thinks.
I'm an optimist. I think it grows overall spend in terms of budget. Yes, it'll now be divided up. AWS will get its piece. Cisco will get its piece. Grass Valley will get its piece. But I'm suspicious if you looked at just margin that a Grass Valley would receive, I think that would grow. I think the overall pie would grow. So I'm very optimistic about where this takes us.
I think it grows the market because I think it unleashes a level of creativity that can't be satisfied. Today, if you've got to set up a new studio to add an additional revenue stream, if you're a broadcaster, if you want to bring up a micro channel or something, and you've got to pay for a lot of fixed assets in order to add a new studio, well, that's a considerable hurdle you have to pass before you make that decision. Big risk you have to take. If you just have to make an investment in time and training and pay for it to see if it works, you're likely to experiment more often if you don't have that big fixed investment. And I think that's where there's a real market expanding potential, because I think what you miss, Josh, when you poo-poo the idea that more content leads to an expanding market, as much as the world's getting bigger and more connected, it's also getting smaller. I can access a lot more content that's targeted to specifically what I want and am interested and care about today than I ever could. And the video is playing catch up to sort of the written form of that with blogs and Reddit channels and all this stuff. The video is playing catch up in that regard. And I think there's money to be had from smaller, more fervent audiences that have yet to be unlocked. And I think that'll be, that's an opportunity for all of us, but you have to get the model in line. So to take a risk in investing in a smaller audience, that you don't have to worry about such a large outlay in expenses. So I think as a supplier group, we have our jobs to do to offer models that accommodate that.
I hope you're correct. I'm rooting for you. You have cynicism born out of experience on this end.
Josh, I've never heard you so pessimistic.
Just on that aspect, I love the cloud. The contrast I'm drawing here is I think existing customers, and I look at these next right deals, I look at that spend, I look at doing that spend in a different way, selling it in a different way. I think there's a real strong case to be made that there are revenue streams that exist. They can be much more profitable for the supplier community. I can really get my head around that. I almost would say cloud is salvation from a lot of things it will unlock from a business standpoint. I hope I'm completely misjudging all these untapped areas where we can get some more revenue, and perhaps it does exist. But even in those instances, it'll be unlocked, as Tim says, through the cloud.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to make a multi-million dollar investment to improve college women's water polo right now and the coverage of women's water polo. But we certainly could do it with a cloud-based offering that allows you to add a few cameras into the mix and do some professional switching and overlay graphics and add some home and away commentators. You know, I think that is a model that would work, and that the technology is pretty well there. And Grass Valley, we think we can be a big part of that answer and can create a better experience.
Tim, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the divestiture of Grass Valley by Belden and the concurrent acquisition of Grass Valley by Black Dragon Capital. That was originally announced, I think it was on about the 4th of February. So we're here in the second week of April. What is the status of that? Is it delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic, coming along nicely? What can you tell us?
Sure. Bell then announced in their earnings conference call that they expected the divestiture to close in the first half of 2020. And I would be lying to you if I said that the COVID situation didn't add a level of complexity that none of us were anticipating, and certainly wasn't anticipated on February 4th when that announcement was made. However, I'm very invested in the future of Grass Valley and making sure that we have a successful transition from Belden to Black Dragon. And I work with both parties, and you know, I'm confident both parties are invested in getting the deal done and closed and doing it within that time frame outlined. And you know, I'm confident the deal will get closed, and Grass Valley has a bright future as a Black Dragon portfolio company.
Do you know roughly how long it's going to take? I guess the first half of the year goes till the end of June, so another couple of months maybe?
Yeah, I would say we were in our final crossing the final items off the list prior to close before the pandemic hit. And so that stretched, you know, I would say that the pandemic has stretched our timeline out a bit, but we're still in a situation where we're likely to close in the time frame that that John mentioned in his earnings. So, before the end of June.
Fun to close a deal in this interest rate environment, I imagine.
Yeah, I tell you what, my tenure at Grass Valley has not been short of exciting things to work through. On day one of my, after being appointed president of Grass Valley, I was handed the white paper, and we had that made the decision to acquire SAM. So really been full go since then. And my team has done a wonderful job navigating all the change over time. And I think this one will be another one that we navigate through with the same grace that we've done some of these other transitions. And I'm really excited about what the Black Dragon team offers Grass Valley in that. You know, all that we've discussed related to transitioning these workflows to cloud, that's really their ethos. And so we can navigate through this transition that was already underway in our development of products. We can do it without having to make the same mistakes that maybe they had made in other experiences and really learn from their learnings and have a much smoother transition as we move our workflows.
Okay, well, we're certainly going to be watching that with interest from here and look forward to speaking to you and everybody once that has closed, and hopefully the public health crisis is behind us as well. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it, and I will sign off now. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Josh.